Punk Italiano Audizioni Radiofoniche, EIAR, trasmissione speciale per l'America Occidentale ed il Pacifico, metri 31 e 15 pari a megacicli 9,63, metri 25 e 4 pari a megacicli 11,81 e metri 19 e 61 pari a megacicli 15,3. Il notiziario italiano verrà trasmesso alle 7:20 ora di Roma, e cioè fra 50 minuti circa. Good evening. This is the Italian Broadcasting System transmitting a special program for the Western United States and Canada, the Pacific area, New Zealand and Australia. This program comes to you in the 31, 25 and 19 meter bands on the following frequencies: 9.63, 11.81 and 15.3 megacycles per second. We open our program this evening with a talk by Ezra Pound entitled E.E. Cummings.
You're calling Ezra Pound speaking. I have to go on trying to tell you, and I now tell you, that Mr. Cummings is a very great writer. I tell you, he follows Henry James and Thoreau and Whitman. I tell you, he is the most intelligent man in America. If that is an earful, take it. I don't know what is to become of our educated intelligentsia or whatever. An American, full-blooded American, writes a book in every way as big as the Apes of God or Ulysses, and it gets some attention. It does not get nearly enough. You make a contribution to world literature, literature of tomorrow, and you pay very little attention to what happens right now under your noses. I told you once before that this book of Cummings, Cummings' The Inspection of Russia, makes a trilogy of big books, along with those of Joyce and of Wyndham Lewis, with Ulysses and Lewis's Apes, Apes of God, by old Wyndham Lewis. He is also, like Mr. Cummings, a photo. That fact has its bearings. Both of them used to use in their eyes. Use of the eye assists human beings in making direct observations. I'm not up to comparing their painting. I know very little of Mr. Cummings' painting, save I saw one bit that had... I'm talking now of his writing. In comparing Amy or Amy or however your different Greek professors tell you to pronounce it with the other two volumes, I say, or maybe I repeat, that Joyce was writing in retrospect. Ulysses dishes up the capitalist situation, the hell made in great cities by the usury system. That is a limit. No very new point of view about anything. Well, I don't know as old Wyndham's Apes had a very new point of view either. Rawlinson, Fielding, Hogarth all might have seen that boil on old England's neck from a similar standpoint. Irish, English, American. Joyce had no philosophy. Guests from his chapel parishioners. Joyce had some rock end of theology and a very conventional outlook. Wyndham Lewis had philosophic views. I naturally never agreed with either of them about much of anything. I agree with my compatriot, Mr. Cummings, a very great deal, but not wholly. I back up damn near anything Mr. Cummings has said or will say. I have to think back after having reread him. I have to think back and wonder now just what was it I wanted to ask him? Where was it I wanted him to go on a bit further? Lewis's limit in that particular hefty volume inhered in his subject. He was a-doing the carbuncle on Johnny Bull's neck. And doing the games in sense. In the sense that he was constantly comparing that nation or state of existence with the American state of existence. With a peripheric view of countries adjacent. Oh yes, E. Estlin was a carry-on from his forebears, both from James and from Thoreau, and, I repeat it, from Whitman. Just that unfinish in certain pages, that weak spot, or what seems a weak spot to the European. maybe three or four paragraphs that I, as professor, would probably cross out of his manuscript, or would have crossed out and said, hey, Hubo, you rewrite this. 432 or 431 pages. Well, I should have been much more severe on Flaubert. Now, how is this book of E.E. Cummings greater than Joyce's volume or than Lewis's Apes, if you must use this terminology? Oh, why do I like it better, if I do like it better? Or put it, why does it come easier for me? I'm hoisting up over questions of technique, Cummings' neologism, his punctuation. Well, as an American, I perceive his technique was to be justified by the way which Thomas Jefferson would have justified it. Justified in the measure that Jefferson applied to neologism. Namely, new words are justified when necessary to express a new meaning. A great deal of Joyce was not new, and a great deal was needless, within the domain of experiment, colors being mixed on a palette. Lewis needed his emphasis, often as emphasis, not merely as meaning, save insofar as emphasis is part of meaning, which is not always. Cummings, I believe, needed every single split word to say what he was saying. In no other way could he have registered Russia in 1931. And it was a very great registration. Also, you might now take it as physic and warning. Ulysses was not a warning. It was a certificate of demise. The Apes of God was, and how, a warning, unheeded. There is still time for the United States of America to read Mr. Cummings before worse things happen. I mean happen to you. Now, in part, Mr. Cummings teaches a doctrine which is very ably condensed. Distant condensare, to write poetry is to condense. Mr. Cummings teaches a truth which a contemporary German author has stated quite clearly as follows, quote, what we are used to call public opinion is based only in very small part on personal experience, or indeed on the experience of particular persons, or indeed on the knowledge of individual voters, but for the most part on a collective representation, collective picture, which brings about, in an obstinate and insistent way, a so-called process of clarification of the problem. Now, the use of a great writer to his race, is due precisely to his personal direct perception and putting it down on paper. Don't matter what he thinks he is doing, his use to his race or nation consists in seeing the object in writing down what he sees and not falsifying his record. Maybe by and by afterwards that word photo, that diagram, that crude diagram can serve to enlighten his people. Don't forget that they are his people, as they never will be the people of any member of Congress. And Mr. Cummings went, unbelievably, he might now say, went down into hell, alias Soviet Russia. And you are now allied to Soviet Russia. A thing Estlin Cummings certainly never thought of when he was writing his Amy or Imy. But which, as a byproduct, the American people, you American folks, might now use for your own getting enlightened. I'm telling you, apart from the joy of reading a great American book, if you read it slowly, it might be of practical use. I once had a kike friend who had a theory about poetry, namely that no one ever read all the words on a page. It didn't. I mean, that theory didn't lead him to making his poetry quite satisfactory. But as a theory, it may also serve to enlighten you. Now, Mr. Cummings writes prose whereof every word tells its story. I myself made the error the first time I tried to read him too fast, got impatient. No use in approaching him that way. Got to read slow. More on one page than on two pages of most authors. How you get as much in 3 minutes reading him slow as you do in reading Josh Pathos faster, or reading Wildorf to read at 10 pages a minute. You can skip in some authors. You cannot, in coming, skip one word on page 10 without maybe losing the bearing of what he is saying elsewhere. Go at him slow. Second point is his parenthesis, or his parentheses. Well, old Henry James, what it is European writer wrote off to death by his parentheses. They are an American habit. They mean something to us and for us as Americans. They mean something more than the one-track mind. They do not imply deviation or lack of direction. They are a desperate attempt, no, not an attempt, a device to avoid leaving out something needed. Some part of a statement needed to set down to register the direction and meaning. Well, Cummings said a whole mouthful. He said a bookful. Way out and above the glooms of Ulysses and the theatre of Lewis Topol in London. There is in Mr. Cummings what the Chinese say with an ideogram. Ideogram that I have translated as candid. I don't much hold with Mr. Legge's translation of that sign. That means what he says in the context, where there's a negative sign before it, wherefrom he was translating it. He translated it devoid of principle. Passage in Confucius about a lawyer making speeches in court with no reference to right, fairness, or justice. Just spouting their rhetoric in the hope of getting a decision for his client. Well, now, that ideogram is worth more than is said in that context. It is made up of two signs. Sign for heart and sign for azure. Azure meaning the man with, and when he got it with a negative, it would mean a man who has no open sky in his heart. In the positive, meaning azure hearted or candid. Here comes in Thoreau. Here comes in the Silver Lake in Mr. Cummings' composition. But here was stays also Mr. Cummings' text, like that German statement about direct sight or perception. Right sign, heart, and azure, man with sky in his heart, is a sign for Americans. I hope you won't lose it. As to the direct vision, that is the painter's genius. It is the genius of Cummings. Few men could have gone into Russia and not been bitten by ideology. Now, what do you know of Russia? If you are studious, you know what you read in Turgenev, Fume and the Nest of Gents, for example, and what you have learned from Dostoevsky, etc. But since then, what records? There is one record available to American and English readers today, namely that made by E.E. Cummings. It may be too late for you really to use it, but you want to live also tomorrow. Perhaps not. At any rate, if you want to live even today, you better read it. You better learn what Roosevelt and Attlee and Cripps are importing into America, into England, and what has already been dumped into America with the hordes of the Tartar shock troops, bubonic plague, and the rest of it. Whither America? Whither the American heritage? What invasions? What invasions in person in the hordes of Bolshevized immigrants? What racial invasions? What invasions of American ideology? Not only from Russia, there are Dr. Freud's imported stinks. Not a Slavic invasion, or not a Slavic invasion only. Jew mud and Tel mud and the rest of it. And the azure heart of America threatened. And how? Oh yes, threatened, the New England heritage threatened. I emphasize this book, among other things, because you have so few books available. And what you have are in part unhandy. You won't read John Adams' 10 volumes? Very unhandy. You have not read Brooks Adams. You could read him. Some of you have a vague suspicion as to what controls your press and your radio. Do you have any concept of what runs your university endowments? Most of them generous, most of them honest in intention, partly from vanity, from sense of magnificence, from desire to hand some of it back. The magnanimity is in most cases unquestioned, but the overhead and the effects of the overhead were not thought of. Even the American Academy of Social and Political Science circulating Jew propaganda, probably in utter unconsciousness of what they're up to. And then this acceptance, supine, groveling, half-witted in the sense of half-conscious or wholly unconscious, unconsciousness of the suppression. Journalist gets an idea that his boss is dumb, that the radio in New York is controlled by a filthy sub-Zoukov. A whole generation or two accepting this sort of suppression while listening to blah about democracy, freedom, baloney. You don't yet know what Hitler has written or what Mussolini has written. You won't read the works of the men who made the American nation. You don't read Horace's Two Nations. Well, damn you, read Cummings if you won't read Brooks Adams, or better read both of them and try to find out what has been done to you and what is being done to you. Conducive to material, spiritual, and intellectual ruin. Ezra Pound speaking. Da Roma. Ezra Pound speaking from Rome.
That was a talk by Ezra Pound entitled E.E. Cummings. This is the Italian Broadcasting System presenting a special program for the western part of North America and the Pacific area. Our musical presentation this evening consists of some selections from the operas. First comes Una Fugitiva Lacrima from the Elixir of Love by Donizetti. This is sung to you by the tenor forte, Elisir d'Amore.